It's Northeast Delta Dental Radio with Tom Raffio.
And I would ask you to add to the handle the longest running show on the Pulse with the same host, with the same, with someone with curly hair.
With the best. And for those listening on radio, Tom has magnificent hair. If you have never seen this man, and he's a runner too. And when he's running with his Hoka shoes, his hair is just kind of Bo Derek-esque blowing in the wind. Do you like that picture I just painted for you there, Tom?
I like it. I wish I could run faster, though, but in any event.
It's all right, as long as you're running. All right, Tom, I'm going to toss it over to you. We have a wonderful guest joining us today. Take it away, Tom.
We do, and with me is a high school Hanover coach, Rob Grable, who's also an ordained minister, Reverend, so I call him Reverend Grable. Rob and I go way, way back to soccer and a lot of other areas. So, Rob, thanks for joining me this weekend.
It's a pleasure to be here.
The pleasure is mine. I can't wait till we get into it. Just first, though, a quick shout out to my guest last weekend, Connie Roy Jakowski, who's currently the Vice President of Human Resources at Northeast Delta Dental. And I think most people in the listening audience know Northeast Delta Dental has won numerous awards for being a best employer in New Hampshire and nationally. And a lot of that really has to do with Connie. So she was supposed to retire at the end of first at the end of 2019 and then at the end of 2020. But with the advent of COVID, she agreed to stay on and shepherd our company through COVID, you know, getting people on and off furlough. And we ended up having a fantastic 2020 when we gave back $27 million to the community in terms of premium relief and grants to dentists, and yet still had a fantastic year, both in 2020 and 2021. So Connie was the architect behind that, and we wanted to really recognize her. So thank you, Connie, and I know you're going to be around Delta Dental for a few more weeks. But this weekend with me, as you can see, is Rob Grable, who's the head coach of Hanover High School, but has other facets of his life, including being an ordained minister, as well as being the last college ice hockey coach for what is now known as SNU. So, Rob, thank you for joining me this weekend. I know we're going to run out of time, as we always do, but thank you for joining me this weekend.
It's great to be here, Tom, and always a pleasure to talk about soccer in New Hampshire.
So let's talk about that. So the season ended a few weeks ago, and I was this year I followed mostly on the NHIA website as well as the papers, but there seemed to be an incredible competition with overtimes and penalty kicks. So why don't you kind of give me the highlights of the season, at least in Division One and Two, and if you want to comment in the other divisions, feel free.
Oh, I like to dive down to all four divisions because there were some great, on both boys and girls side, some great stuff going on. For instance, Hopkinton High School girls winning three in a row, a tremendous program, beautifully coached. But it was interesting this year that all four of the boys' championships, divisions 1, 2, 3, and 4, were decided on penalty kicks. And that, I think, is a great testament to the closeness of the competition.
So why do you think that is? We'll get into this later, but I always believe that New Hampshire, for a relatively small state in terms of population anyway, that disproportionately we have a lot of soccer talent. And it seems like now, kind of like the National Football League, there's a lot more parity than a few years ago, or let's say 10 years ago. So why do you think that is?
Well, I think there's parity because I think there are more good players and more good programs. So you have, you still have a couple of programs in all four divisions that are somewhat dynastic. But I think this year, really going up and down the divisions, anybody could win on a given day. And I think that was a very healthy development. I also liked your comment about the fact that New Hampshire, while a small state proportionately, has made unusually good contributions to soccer on very, very high levels. The men's NCAA men's soccer tournament is winding down this weekend, but to have two kids who grew up playing high school soccer in New Hampshire be coaches at the highest D1 level and bring their teams to the round of 16 with Mark Hubbard, the UNH coach, formerly of Oyster River High School, and Jamie Clark at the University of Washington, the number 2 overall seed from Hanover High School. And I think that's reflected on the girls' side, too. The National Women's Professional League wound up a couple of weeks ago, and one of the goal scorers in the national finals was Rachel Hill from Somersworth, New Hampshire. So you're seeing New Hampshire players and New Hampshire coaches with a background in New Hampshire succeeding on the very highest levels.
No, it's great to see. And we also had a nice development this year. And if you could talk about it, Rob Johnstone, who's coached many, many years at Lebanon, took 1 year off and then came back, finally won his Division II state championship. And I mention that because you've won several. Hanover High School, of course, has won many, many. The other people we've interviewed, like Coach George Pinkham and, of course, Dave Pinkham, have won several championships as well. But to get there so close so many years and finally get it, let's talk about that a little bit.
I think that's a tremendous story. Coach Johnstone is a Hall of Fame coach. He has been doing this for 28 years, and this was his 6th trip to the finals. And at the start of the season, I was referring him to Captain Ahab, looking for the white whale. And Lebanon overcame all kinds of challenges. They lost their starting goalie at midseason, and yet they were able to play a wonderful championship match and beat Oyster River in penalty kicks to win the first Division II championship for Rob. Lebanon had won it before, but this was Rob's first, and an incredibly well-coached team and an incredibly deserving coach.
And since you mentioned the penalty kicks, and we started off the show that way as well, I mean, I remember playing soccer myself in Massachusetts when games were decided on the number of corner kicks a team had, or even not really that long ago in New Hampshire, you would actually play a second game if a game ended in a tie. And that actually happened to Rob not too long ago. So, and he lost the second game. So why do you think it's not necessarily ideal, but might be the best, you know, solution to, you know, get a champion out of it, penalty kicks?
And Tom, don't forget that for several years, they also had the 35-yard shootout, where you'd put the ball at the 35-yard line and you'd give somebody 7 seconds to score. And that was tried for a couple of years. I think penalty kicks are the best of any solution. I think it's what the world does. You decide World Cup games on penalties. You decide professional games on penalties. You decide college games on penalties. And so if that's what the rest of the world's doing, I think it makes sense. And it's incredibly high pressure on those lonely shooters and that even lonelier goalie. But it is universally accepted. And I think if you know it's coming, it's something you can practice. And therefore, you know, it's an even-handed and fair way to decide a contest that has to be decided. It would be lovely to replay the games, but time and money and schedule just don't permit that.
Now, Hanover, you've won a number of matches via penalty kicks, and this year in the final you lost penalty kicks. So you touched on something that I wanted to ask you about. I've always made the assumption that knowing that this may come to that, that you as a coach do enough training on penalty kicks. So tell us about that, and then the yin and the yang of the exhilaration of winning a game on penalty kicks versus, you know, losing it on penalty kicks.
Well, we won in the semifinals on penalties and then lost in a mere 11 rounds of penalties in the final to a wonderful undefeated Nashua South team. And so the highs are very high and the lows are very low, but it's something that is a tradition. And I think at many schools, once the regular season over, is over, the first postseason practice is always you initiate taking penalty kicks at the end of practice, and you do it at the end of every practice. So it just becomes a routine. And over that period of a couple of days, you begin to isolate who you think your best kickers are. You give shooters and goalies the opportunity to practice, and you need to have a lot of players do it. We went 10 players deep in the final against Nashua South. So really, 10 different kids had the chance to contribute to a penalty kick shootout. So in essence, it really was a team effort.
So as a coach, did you literally have the order of the 11 players?
Oh, yeah. But it changes on the fly because of what happens in the game. Someone might be injured or nicked up or out of form. So there's always a quick moment when you're all of a sudden overtime ends and you're going to penalties, and you just check in with everybody. Are you ready? Are you ready? Who wants it? Who wants it? And so there's a lot of thinking on your feet. It's classic looking like a duck, where you're calm on top of it and you're paddling like crazy down below.
You know, Tom, I can tell why this is your favorite guest. Just the conversation that you guys are having right now is amazing. And I want to lace up my sneakers and get back on the field. I'm telling you, I miss my days of playing soccer in school.
Welcome back to the second half of Northeast Delta Dental Radio with your host, Tom Raffio.
So with me is the head coach of Hanover High School, Reverend Robert Grable. I call him Rob. But before we get back into soccer, I want you to tell the world your experience as the last, I guess, Division II coach when they had Division II hockey at the collegiate level for then known as New Hampshire College, the outdoor rink, which my kids used to play at. Now known as SNU, of course, and it's all indoor now. So tell us about that experience.
Well, there was a time when I was coaching both soccer and hockey at what was then New Hampshire College. And some of my duties included running the Zamboni and sharpening the skates. It was sort of all-inclusive. And I've never seen a home rink advantage like the infamous Crystal Palace. Probably worth 4 or 5 goals in a game, we had a great time at New Hampshire College, sort of bringing the program into the mainstream. And SNU now has a wonderfully competitive team. You know, they're playing on even terms with St. A's and Assumption and Stonehill in a very competitive league. We had the good fortune in the last year or two to fly down to Huntsville, Alabama, and play Alabama-Birmingham in front of 3,000 people in the Wernher von Braun Civic Center. And we were, during a transition year, paired against Merrimack College in the NCAA tournament in a 2-game total goal series. And that was an extraordinary experience for our guys, including a number of local guys, David Tillotson and Chip Fortier from Concord, New Hampshire, and Chip Decato and Danny Roy from Merrimack. So we always tapped local talent to fill our ranks.
Wow. So what year was that that you concluded with the national championship game?
In 87. The program happily moved on. There were a number of great coaches that succeeded me, Peter Tufts and Kenny Hutchins. So it's fun to see a program continuing to be strong. Needless to say, the Southern New Hampshire soccer program has two national championships in Division II. That's not a bad record for and the proving ground for Mark Hubbard. He won a national championship at SNU, and now he's banging on the door at UNH, using, by the way, local players, including Concord's own Chris Pinkham.
George's grandson, correct?
George's grandson.
Awesome, and I will follow that. So let's get back now to soccer. So obviously the last couple years we were impacted by COVID, still are. You did manage to have a very successful season as well. And we'll talk about Lions Cup as well. So in general, how do you think we prevailed with COVID, and did anything surprise you in terms of, you know, the protocols, and did it make your job even that much more complex?
There were far fewer protocols this year because we knew so much more. And we knew that conducting an activity out of doors almost brought the risk to zero. So the biggest adjustment teams had to make was riding on school buses with masks on all the time. But there were no instances, zero, of COVID being transmitted in any high school athletics this fall. There were no games canceled because of COVID, at least in New Hampshire high school soccer. And so it was, in all respects, a return to normalcy. Last year, of course, we had regional scheduling and much shortened seasons. So to get back to playing a full season of 16 games plus a full tournament schedule was very rewarding for the kids. And I mean, the reason we do high school athletics, obviously we do it to compete, we do it to try to win, but in terms of mental health, in terms of physical exercise and socialization, what a gift to the players.
Absolutely. And the mental health component is such an important thing you mentioned. And we found the same thing in the running community. We were blessed in New Hampshire that Millennium Running back in June of 2020 developed running protocol. So where most states had literally no racing after like March of 2020 for the rest of the year, we were doing road races, and the mental health of runners and the population health was just amazing. So let's now talk about the Lions Cup game this year. Seems like New Hampshire is losing its competitive advantage or competitiveness versus Vermont. Tell us about the game and what our plans are for next year.
A mere blip on the radar, Tom.
A mere blip, okay.
And the game was, the boys' game was a 5-1 loss. The girls, a 3-2 loss. But the boys' game was a one-goal game at halftime. So I think I like New Hampshire's chances in a given game. First of all, last year's game was a celebration. You mentioned COVID. The fact that we even had a game last July was a small miracle. We changed the format. It became a one-day only event, and it was held at a new neutral site, Hanover High School, which got plaudits from both Vermont and New Hampshire. To have a game located at the midway point of the two states and at the confluence of the two major highways made a huge difference. And we had a very good turnout for the game. We're going back to Hanover High School this year. So that's been decided. We're going to maintain the same format with a one-day event. The teams will meet and practice several times beforehand. But I think New Hampshire has chosen very competitive boys and girls teams this year. So I think we've got some very, very good soccer to look forward to in July of this summer.
And it's a beautiful combination of athletes getting to know each other, the tryout process, but also a fundraiser, the Lions Club. And of course, Delta Dental will be back to sponsor. Couldn't make it up to the game this year because of a wedding, but I plan to be there next year. And I was just so happy that you and others reached out to me, because it was disappointing that we had to put the game on hold the prior year. So,
and you mentioned, of course, the important outgrowth of the game. It's a charity event. It funds the Lions sight and vision programs in both states. And over 47 years, this is a fairly long-standing event. Over 47 years, it has contributed very significantly to their charities. And you're right about the camaraderie. These kids know each other already. They've competed with and against each other. And to have them training together to pull together for the old 603 is a great plus.
It's exciting. And thank you for your leadership. And speaking of leadership, I'm always amazed with looking at the various records that you keep. And by the way, in addition to preaching, in addition to being a leader of young men, and many other things that Rob does, He also keeps the high school coaching records as well as the goal records and team records, and it's pretty amazing. But I'm always amazed with the coaching longevity of so many of our coaches, and that might help explain, you know, why and we're disproportionately successful as a state. But you have Dave Pinkham leading the way with 677 victories that going into this year. So he now has, you know, over 690. And of course, one of your predecessors, George Merrill, at 395, and Dave's brother George is closing in on 380 or so, and so forth. And you mentioned Rob Johnstone, who's getting either at around 300. So how do we get all these, including yourself? And you've sort of relatively new to the game, but you have already, you know, 258 or more victories. So how does this happen?
I think it happens because you see school communities supporting the athletic programs. These coaches are all remaining at their high schools because they've got the support of administrators and athletic directors and the local community. And of course, many of these coaches do so much more locally, working with youth programs and supporting community programming. So it's not surprising that there's no temptation to leave, because if it's something you enjoy doing, and if it's something that gives so many young people tangible benefits, why would you want to do anything else?
You know, when I interview the Pinkhams, George and Dave, they always say that having a community that supports soccer is the whole key. And it's lovely to continue coaching. And George no longer teaches, but he coaches. So it's pretty cool. So as you kind of put your crystal ball ahead, we've talked about the Lions Cup next year. Is next season's at the four different divisions going to be equally as competitive, you think?
If not more so. You have a temptation always at the end of a season, you know, and here we are in December and we're in the midst of winter weather now, and you do look forward kind of longingly to the warm days ahead. It's like a farmer going through the seed catalogs, and so you speculate on what it's going to be like, and there are always surprises. There are always new teams that pop up and do well, and that's a source of real pleasure. But I think you'll see a lot of the usual suspects banging on the door again, whether that's Bo and both the girls and boys side. I think we've got a relatively newcomer, Nashua South, their first ever championship this year, and they are going to be bound and determined to repeat it.
That's great. Well, we're going to have you on again.
Yeah.
Because it's just, it's like the 24 minutes go by like that. We can talk about the rule changes. The one thing I'm going to lobby for is for mandating mouth guards again, but that will take another whole show. So we'll deal with that. But Dazzy, I like to justify my existence. I can't, you know, I'm talking soccer. I got to talk, you know, fitted mouth guards by dentists.
We've got to bring it over to dental somehow. Yeah, I mean,
exactly,
it's got to be.
Exactly. But Rob, thank you. Rob, Naz, you may not know this, but he has one of the most extraordinary high percentages of victories. And
I did not.
He took over.
He's so humble. He doesn't want to hear it.
And, you know, Hanover was in Division II and always would win that and then moved up to Division I. And without missing a beat, they've won at least one championship at that level too and made the finals this year, as you heard. So thank you, Reverend Grable, and for your leadership in the community in general, as well as for your young student athletes.
It's a pleasure to be here. And the next time you see Hanover, their new uniforms are going to look like Nazi's sweater.
I love it.
Baby Yoda. Excellent. Gentlemen, thank you both. We'll see you next time for Northeast Delta Dental Radio on the Pulse of New Hampshire.
Thank you for listening to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. Be sure to tune in next time.